The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available as always on iTunes, Stitcher, and at nfl.com/Sheck.
S-H-E-K-Sheck.
Week two just about in the books. We're coming at you at 4:20 p.m. Ow!
I don't know what that means.
Neither do I, but I've seen the kids or heard the kids do that. On Monday evening out here on the West Coast in the nerve center of the NFL in Culver City, California, we are awaiting the kickoff, the Eagles at the Colts, and we are joined to review all the rest of week two. We basically have what the weekend it was looks like, and save, like I say, this final matchup here. So who better to kibitz with, like we do at the start of every week, or I guess the end of every football weekend, or the start of a new weekend, whatever. He is the host of his very own podcast now, the Move the Sticks podcast here at NFL.com, also available on iTunes and Stitcher. You see him all over the network. You see him all over NFL now. It's Move the Sticks himself, Daniel Jeremiah. What's the poop, fella?
What's going on, Dave?
Nothing. Listen, I thought it was a grand weekend of football. And, you know, listen, I'm going to say up front and then we move on from it. More ugliness, Adrian Peterson. You know what? I don't know. Maybe you are a lawyer, DJ, and I'm not aware of it either. I don't want to get into legal. So I just want to talk about football. How about that? Is that cool
with
you?
That's fine.
Let's do it, and let's dig in to – let's play – something you and I have talked about over the last 6-8 months here is the idea of – because you have a sunny disposition by nature. You don't seem –
because I'm wearing cargo shorts.
I don't know about that. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, by the way. What, you know?
It's 100 – I live in Temecula, yeah. Murrieta area. It's 100-plus. It was – I just didn't want to have the jeans, and you sit in a leather seat. It's a long drive up here.
Yeah. But that's at your home, right? That's in your casual, you know, downtime, in your personal time.
But in the transition from home to work today, look, I've never really been a shorts to work guy, and I noticed by looking around today that nor is anybody else in that building.
No. This is a place of business.
But today I was willing to take that risk, you know?
All right.
Whatever capital I have built, I cashed it in today.
Bygones are here by bygones, and I want to talk about
– No. Before we get to football.
Go ahead.
Before we get to football.
Lay it on me.
So since I have a podcast now, and since I technically kind of am a spinoff, right?
I suppose, yeah.
So you have not only
– I have a coaching tree.
You have
right.
a tree. You have a podcast tree now.
I really do.
So around the league, guys?
Yes.
Who else do you got?
You. There's one more I think I'm forgetting about. That might be it. Not the coach's show. I can't take credit for Billick doing a show.
What is my – I just want to know, like, am I – Frazier?
You're Laverne.
I'm Laverne. Yeah. Laverne and Shirley.
You're my Laverne DeFazio to my Fonzie. Arthur Fonzarelli.
That's all right. I can
deal with
Laverne.
That's a good – I like that. I'm the Fonz of NFL podcasts.
I'm going to start wearing a cursive D on my shirts when I come in here.
Why has no one in history ever done that, by the way? That was a pretty – Laverne, for all the kids out there, Laverne and Shirley, she always had a cursive L stitched into her clothing. That's a weird thing that no one picked up on that.
That's a great move.
I also like that in Three's Company, Mr. Roper would crack wise at the expense of his wife, and his best zinger of every episode, he would break from the scene and find the single camera and stare into it and smile, and then they would just go back to the scene and continue as though he hadn't just broken the fourth wall.
Nice.
No one's ever done that one either. I'm surprised by that.
All right, we can do football now.
Okay, let's get into football. Are you tired of me?
That was fun. I just wanted to get that out there.
Did you been watching some good TV shows while you wait for football?
No.
No?
I haven't seen any TV.
Oh, listen. I recommend
the Nick. I'm an HGTV guy. That's basically
the Nick is fantastic stuff. And talk about getting ready for NFL football on Sunday. Great weekend or great Saturday, especially at night of college football. Hopefully we'll have time to kibitz about that. But a few questions as we get into it. Let's do glass half empty, glass half full here with a bunch of teams, with players, and so on. Like I say, you have a sunnier disposition than I. So maybe you can try and be positive, and then I'll bring my usual snarky cynicism or whatever to it and try and
– The truth lies somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, probably with that. Real quick, though, because we can talk about this Eli Manning business, and it's hard to be positive about that, so I'm not going to put you on the spot and try to do that. Instead, let's think of a way. I mean, I really do believe. I was talking to TJ Houshmandzadeh last week, and I bring him up because I like the name drop, but also because he made an interesting point that I've made too. This might be Eli Manning's last season under center in New York.
You're not alone in that. I mean, kind of the thing I keep hearing, just you talk to people and they're speculating. Obviously, we're 2 weeks into the season. We'll see where it goes. Maybe this thing gets turned around. But as people say, hey, I wouldn't be surprised if next year, if you're looking at new quarterback, new general manager, mm-hmm. new head coach, just a whole new era for the Giants.
So that would mean that maybe if the Rams, because I really feel like what you saw in week two from a lot of teams, more teams than not who were 0-1, that they sense that their backs were up against a wall and they really needed
the Cowboys.
A lot of teams. I feel like, I mean, the Chargers, you know, I felt surprised by them losing in Arizona.
The Patriots.
And yet I thought they were going to, did I not black tie behind the glass? I said that the Chargers were going to take a run at the Seahawks. I said it on the podcast last week with when we were making our picks.
Damon Sheck's a genius.
Thank you, A.J. Hawk. And we're going to be talking with our pal A.J. Hawk in just a little while. They got off the schneid, did the Packers. They bounced back. Now I'm bouncing all over the place.
But you are all – you're normally all over the place. Today, you're
– Especially so. I get excited. This is one-on-one time with DJ.
You were jumping right into the podcast, and then I did the whole spin-off thing, and you've yet to recover.
I was ready to roll.
You haven't recovered.
So you know who's to blame? You.
Exactly.
All
right, get your train of thought. Let's go. Come on. Let's go.
Right, my first question to you is, before we get to Eli and before we start playing glass half empty, glass half full, let's trade Eli right now. Where would you trade Eli? And look, in a lot of professional sports leagues, if things aren't working out, if things are a bad fit, and the season is still salvageable,
I'll give you a team.
Go ahead.
Tampa Bay.
All right. And then you send Mike Glennon up to New York. That seems like a winning trade for both sides.
Well, I think you'd send more than Mike Glennon. I know Eli struggled, but still, with his resume, it would cost you a pick and a player and something else. So our fictitious trade.
Why don't we
trade,
hear about this? You.
I like this
former
trade.
Former scout of the Ravens, Eagles, and Browns. Why don't we hear more trades in the NFL?
It's complicated with the money and everything else that comes with it. Teams are loath to part with draft picks because all the best teams, that's how they're built, through the draft. So people don't want to part with those. And now you've got a quarterback who's declining, who's on the wrong side of 30. You know, it can be tricky. It can be a tricky move. Who's got a lot of money coming to him. So that, but I like that. Just take all that other stuff out of it. A team that you put him with. Now, they are not very good up front. That's going to be a little bit of a problem because Eli's not the most mobile guy. But having those big guys outside, what Eli does best is throw the ball down the field. And when you look at what the two guys they have there with Mike Evans and with Vincent Jackson, not a bad fit.
Well, but what I know Christian Ponder is no victory for anybody to get. But if you're really desperate for a quarterback, why aren't the Vikings incented to part ways with Ponder? Take him, please. Maybe he'll be good enough for your team to win an extra game or two, and then we'll finish lower in the standings.
But who are
and
the
we'll
teams,
get a higher pick than
who are,
you will.
Who are the teams that are dying for a quarterback, though? Because most of them have a young guy on campus. They're just trying to either buy their time. That's, to me, my question from the weekend, watching these games, Dave, and I'm jumping all your glass half full, half empty, everything. Jacksonville. And I kind of said this from the beginning. I know that they're intended on redshirting Blake Bortles for the whole year, and they want to hold out as long as they can. They had 148 yards of offense.
Listen.
Chad Henne got sacked 10 times.
Preaching to the choir on Blake Bortles. I've been calling for this forever. Either way, you're not going to the Super Bowl. I understand this redshirt mentality in the NFL, especially the thing that's surprising about it is that Gus Bradley came from Seattle. The model, and he seems like he's literally taking pieces from that defense and bringing them all down, using the same system, except for one of the most important decisions of the Pete Carroll era up there was, hey, we got a kid who's talented. Wow, he's ready to go sooner than we thought. Let's start Russell Wilson. Why Gus Bradley isn't doing the same thing is perplexing.
The only thing I can think of is that they don't want to throw him out there with the team struggling around him and early failure. How will he be able to handle that? But, you know, compare it to the Seattle situation, that team was pretty well built, and then they dropped the quarterback in there. This would be more of a situation where you drop the quarterback in, you still got a lot of building to do around him. But, I mean, look, my thing is just from trying to be competitive week in, week out, Blake Bortles can move around. Mm-hmm. And as much heat as they've been getting from pass rush, you can move the pocket with him. You can do some different things. I do believe at this point in time, after a couple games, he gives you a better chance to win ball games Now it comes down to just the development of him. Are you going to stunt his growth if you put him out there and he gets hit a bunch?
Well, I mean, like we said, and, you know, Coach Brian Billick said when we did our big summit, our preseason.
Oh, he believes in playing
supercast.
Yeah.
He said, it's Chad Henne. I mean, he said it with such disdain in his voice. He said, what are we talking about? Who are these journeymen that we're choosing to put in? Matt Cassel? He's not going to take you to the Super Bowl. May as well let the kid. How much debate is there around the NFL among personnel guys about it? Because it seems like a very baseball kind of mentality. Not 21st century NFL thinking that we're going to damage this kid's psyche by letting him play. I mean, how many kids have suffered from that, have been damaged beyond repair because they played behind a crummy line or played on a bad team and lost too many? It didn't hurt Troy Aikman, as a for instance.
Yeah, I mean, obviously everybody looks at David Carr and points to that.
Right.
And he got shell-shocked. And we, in Baltimore, we threw Kyle Buller in there right away. And that wasn't necessarily a thing where the team wasn't good enough for him to go in there. That was him not being ready, you know, mm-hmm. not being ready to play. But I don't know. If Kyle Buller would have waited 2 years and played, I don't know if it would have been any different.
You.
I don't know if it would have been any different. He just didn't have it. So you can always find examples on those things. You know, some of it, I think, a little bit of it is just you're nervous, you know. Man, it's that nice chip to have hope, right? You throw Blake Bortles out here after you've lost two games in a row. And then he struggles for three or four games as your fan. What else do you have to hope for? But if he's still kind of out there and you're in week 6 or 7, you're 0-6, you're 0-7, you're going, but man, we might get to see Blake Bortles here. Boom, you drop him in the lineup week 8, week 9, week 10. He shows you some positive signs. It kind of gives you more hope, you know, going through the season as opposed to him coming in and now you lose 10 in your last, you know, 12 games or what have you.
As far as that goes, like I said at the top, it feels to me like every year we fall into this good bad conundrum with teams, with players, and it's a product of having only 120 minutes worth of game film to look at on any given team. So some teams came out and were flat, and they you know, for whatever reason, they didn't win in week 1, and then in week 2 they have what appears to be this bizarre bounce back. Like, where did that team come? How did the Chargers lose to Arizona, but then they can beat Seattle is the example that keeps coming to mind. You know, the Browns win in week 2 against the Saints. That's a pretty impressive victory. You can go up and down the board here. Is there conversation behind the scenes with, do you know, are the head coaches saying to their gang, to their players in the locker room during the week, guys, if we lose here, we're 0-2 and we're doomed? What is that? How do they couch that to these guys to get them up? Because some of these teams will be completely irrelevant in 5 or 6 weeks, and they'll just lay down, I would think, or they won't put up as much fight.
Well, you got to balance it. I mean, you got to balance between knowing, hey, this is an important game. You don't want to use the term must win because it's not a must win. But you don't want them to come out there so tight and thinking everything's on the line, but you want to balance out the importance of the moment. That's a tricky thing to do for a head coach. And to me, when you look at the teams that needed to bounce back from last week to this week, I think we talked about it on last week's pod, talking about the Baltimore Ravens. You open up the season with 2 home divisional games.
Yep. That
would have been a crusher if you lose that one. You're
0-2,
dropping 2 home divisional games. That's tough to recover from. So, you know, the term must win doesn't apply because it's not – you know, must win, get in the playoffs. That's what a must win
game is.
Right.
If I actually said the word must win, then I apologize to the listener because I have bemoaned that phrase many times. The only game that is must win is the one that if you lose it,
you don't get to play anymore.
Yeah. Right. That's must win.
That's correct. So there were a lot of teams, though, that we saw. You know, Dallas, I mean, it's kind of funny because I didn't really put it together at the time, but I'm sitting here going, man, that's – you give them a lot of credit because their defense played far greater than anything I ever expected from them. They ran the ball really well. That's kind of a formula I think maybe they can use. It'll work going forward. And it's just positive, positive, positive. And then it just kind of looks at you, kind of look at it and you go, the Cowboys are 1-1. They're perfectly on track for their fourth straight 8-8 season.
Yeah, it's so true. Well, let's go back to that Baltimore and Pittsburgh game then, because in the ensuing hours, and in case this is your first listen to the Dave Dameshek football program, I do not hide the fact that I am born and raised in Pittsburgh and therefore a Steelers fan. In the, you know, let's say 12 hours, 24 hours after Thursday night's game, so much negativity for a team that is 1-1. And I see what everybody else sees. this team is fundamentally flawed at the defensive line, especially with what Dick LeBeau wants to do. I think now in hindsight we need to go back and erect a statue of Casey Hampton for his decade or more of greatness there. And how
that statue would be 6 feet tall and 6 feet wide.
Well, that guy, I mean, you know, for a decade and before that, you know, that's obviously what the 70s were predicated on too, but especially with Dick LeBeau. Don't let the team run. Make them one-dimensional, and then you unleash the pass rush, and it covers up. You just get some physical corners that are going to hold their guys up at the line for a second, and then it's hard to have big plays against you, and in fact, you make big plays with the pass rush. But when you take away the ability to just stop the run and make that a foregone conclusion early in the game, then you tend to struggle. But that being said, so they're flawed in the middle. They're soft. They got a soft underbelly.
The edge rush didn't look all that great in that game either, though.
But isn't that based on – I mean, isn't that – again, doesn't that go back to Casey Hampton, Brett Kiesel, Aaron Smith in the heyday being able to consume all the would-be blockers and freeing up the
I don't know. I think that helps you get put in more long yardage situations, gives you more pass rush opportunities. But when they did have pass rush opportunities in that game – I didn't really see them winning one-on-one on the outside. I mean, not to the tune of what it used to look like.
Well, so are you – so let's play it, first of all, with the Baltimore Ravens. I feel like this is a team, especially if the Browns are halfway decent. This is a and we're going to find out this weekend, because week three, if you haven't looked yet, do yourself a favor. Dig up the schedule. We have got some wonderful games awaiting our eyeballs here. One of them, the Ravens at the Browns – is tremendous, really, you know, to see if the Browns can keep this going. And by the way, keep in mind, the Browns, if it weren't for that fourth quarter fake punt by the Steelers that was successful and still was not a great idea to do that in that situation in their own territory, if that doesn't work out, the Browns are likely 2-0 right now. And so now you have the Ravens. So glass half empty, glass half full. We'll start with the Ravens,
yep.
DJ. You do the glass half full part of them. Glass, what do you think of these of this Browns team? I mean, this
the Ravens.
Team.
The glass half full for the Ravens. A couple things here. We saw them be more physical up front, run the ball better week two, be more committed to it, have a balanced approach. That was the big knock from week one. I don't know what they were thinking, throwing the ball 62 times and Gary Kubiak's first game as offensive coordinator. But you saw more balance in week two. That's a good thing going forward. Steve Smith has been quick to gel with Joe Flacco. Steve Smith obviously still has plenty left. You're seeing Pitta, the things
the
he can
NFL
do.
The game is not played in Studio 66.
There he is, our pal Steve Smith. I'm happy for his success. I wish it weren't in Baltimore, though, at the expense of the Steelers. But it comes just in time right after the Torrey Smith retirement, which I missed over the summer. What happened to that guy? Where did he go?
But see, I was going to spin that positively, is that now you're coming off of a big win where you really haven't got anything out of Torrey Smith. So eventually they'll figure out a way to get him more involved, you know, over the top. My thing is, you got to be committed to the run game for Torrey Smith to be effective. If you're just going to go back there and throw it a bunch, Torrey Smith's not going to wow you with his route running ability. His big thing is getting on top of people with his raw speed, making plays down the field. That works off of play action when you can successfully run the football. So that I think there's time coming where you'll see some more of him in this offense.
My half-empty view is that this was a game, like you say, and it's positive in the short term, that they were able to rise up, adverse circumstance. Obviously, you know what was going on off the field last week with the Ravens and all over the NFL. And so this team probably, again, felt like we're not just going to be 0-2 if we lose this game. We're going to be 0-2 in the division with two home losses to divisional foes. In other words, pretty much realistically, I don't know what's going to happen for us to get into the playoffs as anything other than a wild card at best. I mean, I don't know how we would get over that. So they rose up and they took care of business, and there are a couple of places, there are in most NFL games, that had they gone the other way, if a couple of calls here, if a turnover early in the game for the Steelers had gone the other way, this thing's the nip-and-tuck affair, as most of these Ravens-Steelers games are. And who knows how we're talking. As it is now, though, the buzz, one of the things in Pittsburgh is Dick LeBeau finally, has the game passed him by? This happens every year when the Steelers' defense doesn't come out of the gate looking good. And I hate to indulge this conversation. He's in the Hall of Fame. But, in fact, you say not a great-looking pass rush. Is it a personnel issue or is it a scheme issue with the Steelers?
Jimmy's and Joe's, X's and O's, right? That's kind of the old saying. And I've, you know, coming from the personnel side of things, I've always believed that, you know, it's more about the Jimmys and Joes. So I just don't know who the dominant players they have coming off the edge, which that defense is predicated on. You touched on the fact you don't have a clogger in the middle to stop the run. Shazier's shown you some flashes I get excited about. Timmons has been a little bit up and down. You see the athleticism with those two. The secondary, I mean, the penalties, you know, we could debate that all day long. I thought a couple of those were tough calls.
I mean, the one in the end zone on Mike Mitchell was ludicrous, but that's not what lost them the game. So
yeah. But the secondary, the thing that's kind of troubled me a little bit with them, just the overall tackling. I mean, the tackling with the Steelers, that was – you caught the ball. You might catch the ball, but you're going to get hit hard, and they're going to wrap you up and get you on the ground. Troy Polamalu was the one wild card. You see him with some flyby missed tackles, just kind of playing reckless as he does. But he was the only one. Man, they had a lot of missed tackles in that game the other night.
And Mike Mitchell, too, with terrible angles, too. Troy Polamalu is running all over the place with his cut off, with his head cut off, and it looks like Mike Mitchell's doing the same thing. Yeah, and of course – no turnovers is what continues to ail this team. But without a pass rush, what are you
going
to do? Yeah.
That's been going on for a while.
I still, though, say that when you have –
what does Snoop think, by the way? Did he weigh in the other night?
I didn't check in with the so-called greatest Steelers fan in the world, even though he lives 4,000 miles away.
Is he writing for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette now? What's the name of the paper there?
I don't know what he does. Yeah, he writes for the Post-Gazette. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what he does. Yeah. He started
come on,
a new
player. What's that? What's up with that?
I don't know what my take on Deion Sanders' famous little segment has to do with anything. But, you know, first of all, it took a lot. You were a man. You conducted yourself like a man conducts himself, Daniel Jeremiah. When over the weekend or on Thursday night when you were watching Le'Veon Bell, you penned me on Twitter a heartfelt apology for
you want to read that
for you. Well, I don't have it in front of me, but you mentioned that you said, like, you know, sincere apology for doubting your comparison of Le'Veon Bell to Shady McCoy.
Labeling it as a ridiculous comparison.
Yes,
I'll be honest with you, Dave. I've you know, you're watching, trying to keep up as many teams as you can and watching it, and I, you know, saw Le'Veon Bell a little bit earlier in the year and just, you know, didn't really give it a deep study. I haven't studied him on tape. Then we're watching that game the other night, and I'm like, if you'd have told me that was Le'Veon Bell from what I saw at Michigan State when he was 240 pounds coming out of college and he slimmed down a little bit for the combine. Last year he probably played at 235. If you asked me to guess just after having watched tape for a lot of years and in body typing, he looks like he's 215 pounds. He looks like he's lost 25 or 30 pounds. Doesn't he look like the same guy?
Boy, he just looks super. We're talking about NFL football players. We're talking about professional athletes, but he looks uber athletic. The figure he cuts.
And that's not what he was in college.
No.
That's what's so funny. He was just a pounder. He was kind of a power back and had a little bit of a gliding style to him, kind of a little Larry Johnson type mold. And then now he's like, he looks more like a scat back. So I manned up. I apologize to you.
You compared him to Deuce McAllister. I compared him to Shady McCoy. I asked Bucky Brooks, our pal and fellow scout, what his comparison was, and he went with Steven Jackson, which bummed me out. That was
a bigger
closer
guy
to yours.
But
yeah.
See, he's, again, me and Bucky have spent all that time breaking him down at Michigan State. So that's the guy that we reference.
Well, point is, and I'll do glass half full on the Steelers, Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, you can make a case that those are top six players at each of their positions. Plus, Marcus Wheaton looks very good, very promising. Yep. Heath Miller is good.
6 points.
A decent offensive line. I know 6 points, but it's hard to imagine that you're going to shut that offense down. I mean, the Lions had 7 points in Carolina on Sunday.
So the all top six, right? I can get with that. Marcus Gilbert, top 60?
Oh, I mean, was that – what gives? That's your
– I don't know that I've ever seen a guy completely – I've seen guys take charges all the time where they just get flat-backed by a pass rusher. I don't see it very often where you get flat-backed and they still get the sack while they're laying on top of you.
I mean, it's really bad. And the Steelers –
they just gave him an extension.
And Cortez Allen. They've just now spent tens of millions of dollars to secure. The reason they did it is because it didn't happen in a vacuum. It's informed by them losing Keenan Lewis a couple of years ago to New Orleans after a gangbusters contract year. They don't want the same thing to happen with Cortez Allen because they would literally have William Gay and William Gay alone on the roster at cornerback if they lost Cortez Allen.
There is a draft every year.
Well, what are they going to do? Are they going to draft four cornerbacks?
Atlanta did it the other day. That's worked out really well. They look good on defense.
That was the next team to play glass half empty, glass half full with because you saw a tremendous performance against a team a lot of people think of as a contender, the 0-2 Saints now, but they beat them in week one. Then they get just beaten up by Cincinnati. Glass half full, DJ, on the Atlanta Falcons.
Glass half full is Julio Jones is healthy, and he is explosive. He leads the league right now and catches over 20 yards, I believe. So you've got him back, and you look at all the different weapons they have in their passing game. I think they're going to be equipped to win some shootouts with a lot of teams. I think they can be a team that gets you to, you know, maybe even 9 wins, you know, with what they can do offensively. Now, I'm supposed to be the glass half full guy, so I will say positive spin on the fact they're the only team without a sack in the NFL is that they have the most room to improve, and that's a good thing.
Well, here's another one. See, I can help you out. I don't have to always be cynical. I can tell you they're in a division with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who people thought were going to be contenders. You have to rob Peter to pay Paul. If Tampa was much better in 2014, then somebody has to pay the price for that in the division. If that's not the case, though, then maybe they get 2 wins there. They're already one up in the head-to-head with the Falcons. It's interesting to me that that division, that there are 3 teams. You keep up with the Joneses, and we've talked about that from a personnel standpoint and how you sort of attack the big kid on the block, the bully on the block, the AFC East phenomenon. How do we directly take care of the Patriots if we're one of those other 3 teams? Do we try to match them and keep up with the Joneses, or do we try to counter them Joe Frazier versus Muhammad Ali style? It's interesting. Tampa seems like their goal is we need pieces on offense, playmakers, and everything else to keep up with New Orleans and with the Falcons. And they're the Carolina Panthers, who, to me, look decimated, especially
Greg Hardy ain't out there on Sunday. Good through 2 weeks.
What gives? How is this team?
Yeah, I mean, that's the weird thing to me. I thought Tampa was going to be the team that took that step forward. But the difference between the 2 teams, really, obviously the quarterback play has been a little bit better. Even with Derek Anderson playing there. But the big difference to me is that the offensive line, the new pieces for the Carolina Panthers have gelled together quickly, more quickly than what we've seen down in Tampa. Tampa's not very good up front on the offensive line, and they're good in a lot of other areas. I mean, you look at what they have on the outside on offense. Gerald McCoy now with the broken hand, though, you know, he's a big-time player. Levante David, they've got 2 safeties. They have a lot of talent on that football team, but if you don't get great quarterback play and you can't protect your quarterback, you're going to have issues.
It's also – it goes back to what I said in the middle of last season. We talk about, you know, quarterback league and the line of scrimmage is everything. And really what it comes down to for me is depth. That's what wins now. You watch the 49ers on Sunday night. Now they end up losing the game, but – the fact that they're still relevant, the fact that they housed Dallas in week one, and then it looks like until Kaepernick starts giving the ball away, they're going to beat the Bears and be 2-0 here without the pieces, the key pieces on defense. And then I realized, oh, yeah, some teams just draft better. You know, Corey Lemonnier is a fine replacement. You can get by with him out there, whereas other teams, like, as a for instance, the Pittsburgh Steelers, who have 0 depth, if anybody goes down, you're suddenly decimated. So depth is everything, and apparently the Panthers, the reason we could see some of those guys move on and think, what are the Panthers doing? This is going to be a down year. They're obviously saddled with those running back contracts.
Whole new receiving core.
They have to fall back, but they keep on going there. And Calvin Benjamin, I believe it was you who mentioned his great catch radius is going to really be especially useful with Cam Newton and his inaccuracy slinging the ball. But he did pay that off.
How about the throw, though? That was the throw of the day to me, was Cam Newton's touchdown pass to Jason Avant. He literally – he's in the clear. He threw it so hard he knocked him over with how hard he threw the ball. I was like, oh. There are sometimes – I said on TV, there are sometimes where you make catches and there's sometimes the ball catches you. He had no choice. That ball swallowed him.
But all right, so we're now half empty on let's get back to the Falcons here. They can outshoot you if you get into that kind of game. But, you know, it's a weird thing that it's hard to sort of quantify versus big-time offensive numbers. But last year I said, and it wasn't me being obstinate to say, I think the Seahawks are going to beat the Broncos in the Super Bowl. I just think they're going to out-physical them. It still is hard to conjure in your gut. Like that's going to happen because you can't quantify brawn.
Yeah.
You can quantify, hey, this offense scores 40-something a game. How are you going to stop that? It just goes away if you have a more physical team against you. And the Bengals, they shamed the Falcons offense. And it's not really an indictment of Matt Ryan, I guess, but it also calls into question this thing that everybody got over their skis with a week ago. See, he is elite, Dave. You just don't understand what a great quarterback looks like. Well, it's a major kryptonite to me that if you get pressure on a guy that he just falls apart, which Matt Ryan did on Sunday.
Who did they beat week one?
The Saints.
Who beat the Saints week two?
I know it. Isn't that, that's exactly right. And what, and you know what? The AFC North is doing the old school routine here. Who did, you know, the Browns beat the Saints, you mm-hmm. know, so, and by the transitive property, what does this say about the Saints? I'm not exactly sure, but, the Bengals could do that to the Falcons.
Here's, by the way.
But yeah, I mean the physical nature of all those teams, the Browns and Bengals and Ravens, against these high powered offenses, you know, they expose them. It's just soft.
That's true. I mean,
no,
it's just a physical brand of football. We're just watching here as they're getting ready to kick off here pretty soon with the Philadelphia Eagles and the Colts, and they were showing Sanchez warming up, and I was going to ask you about your trade scenarios.
Ah. There you
if you're
go.
The Eagles, say you get before the trade deadline, you still look like you're going to, you know, you're in control of your destiny, you're going to win the division, have a good shot to win your division, be a playoff team. More valuable to have Sanchez as your insurance policy, or are you better off spinning him off to a team? Maybe there's a team that has an injury at the position and you get a chance to get something for him that can maybe help you right now.
Well, you can answer that better than me because you've kept your eye on Matt Barkley, what he's done since he arrived in Philly. What's the buzz there? Does he have any ability to go into a game and be effective?
Well, I think Sanchez is way ahead of him. Barkley
I think that's all you need to say.
Yeah,
you just said the words Sanchez is way ahead of him. That's not good news.
Well, this offense is quarterback friendly now. I think Sanchez, if he got a chance to play in the Chip Kelly system, he'd do really well. I really do.
I think we talked about this last week on the podcast, but you know, if you ever question the impact of coaching, if you ever doubted that from Mike Singletary to Jim Harbaugh, the early returns, at least from Lane Kiffin to Steve Sarkisian and so on, these team, a good coach, real, it's remarkable to me. It's just that you talk about, what did you call them? The Jacks and Joes?
It's Jimmy's and Joe's versus
Jimmy's and Joe's, but obviously you get the right guy like Chip Kelly.
Yeah, those are rare, though. To me, it's those coaches that make that drastic of a difference. If I had my choice, I'm always take the most talented team, and then, you know, secondary would be having the great coach.
Glass half full,
Barry Switzer won a Super Bowl, okay?
but that's – listen, I could have won a Super Bowl. I might have won two if I were the head coach of that Cowboys
Jimmy's
team.
And Joe's.
Barry Switzer directly cost them four straight. Ask Michael Irvin about that.
He gets hot about that.
He'll tell you that they should have won four or five in a row. Maybe five is going too far, but I don't disagree with him that they should have really won four in a row.
Wow.
If Jimmy Johnson and Jerry Jones could have worked out whatever little nonsense they had going between each other, they would have won probably at least three straight, maybe four in a row. All right, half full. Chicago Bears with their quarterback, who I declared preseason would be the NFL MVP, Jay Cutler.
Well, I heed your advice, and I drafted him for my fantasy team, so I was glad to see him do well the other night. No, they're going to be a challenge for people just because you have a big-time quarterback. You've got the weapons on the outside. You've got the running back. The offensive line is very underrated. They did a great job of fixing that last year. They have a great play caller. Defensively, being opportunistic. I don't think, you know, down in, down out, they're that great up in their front seven. So you need to be opportunistic. We saw it with the rookie Kyle Fuller getting his hands on two passes in the second half of that game. That's kind of the formula they're going to need going forward. And the interesting thing with the Bears is they opened up, they lost to Buffalo, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then they go play San Francisco. Even though San Francisco's missing some pieces, those are two really, really good defenses. Wait till they start getting in these NFC North games with secondaries that they're going to be able to carve up. You're going to see Jay Cutler and company put up some big stats. But I want to go real
quick. I agree with that, absolutely.
So it's going to get easier. And then I want to go real quick, though, to Buffalo with what they've done. I tweeted.
All right, let me just say this, though. The half empty for the Bears, and I loved what Jay Cutler was able to pull off. I don't know why it took them 30 minutes. It was weird to me that it took Tressman and Cutler and the pass catchers to figure it out. But once they started going at those corners, that was – I mean, I said that all week leading up to it. And by the way, I pat myself on the back.
You've done a lot of that today, by the way.
So what? I said Jay Cutler, four touchdown passes in the win in San Francisco. People scoffed. What are you, insane, Damashek? No, indeed. I was right on, and we'll see what happens with Cutler over the long haul. The downside, and this isn't really an indictment of the Bears, but again – The 49ers, I don't know what to make of this team. They should be unstoppable on offense, and yet they are not. And defensively, they should be Swiss cheese, and they're hanging in somehow. I can't make any sense of how they're doing it, but like I say, maybe it's just a matter of depth. And
it's identity, too, just kind of how you build your team, the identity of your football
team.
That
doesn't make sense, though.
It does. It's a culture.
That's
it's
the sort of thing someone like me would be saying
to
a personnel guy says that's poppycock.
It's not true. It's not true. And that I say that because of my time in Baltimore. It didn't matter how many defensive players we let go in free agency. Adalius Thomas gone. Bart Scott left. Ed Hartwell left. You know, Gary Baxter left, on and on and on and on. They all left. It didn't matter. You just put in new guys, and it was just that toughness was part of the fiber of your team, and it carried forward. Then I go to the Philadelphia Eagles. You look at the Philadelphia Eagles on offense, always score points. Donovan McNabb goes out. Fine. Jeff Garcia goes in there. Score points. A.J. Feely comes in there. Don't worry. Score points. That's what they do. That's their identity.
So Greg Roman is the key. I know that's not what you said, but is that the real trick of things for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think finding a balance and protecting the football. They want to be explosive, more explosive than they've been in the past, not just a run-heavy team, get some explosive plays down the field. Kaepernick's got to protect the ball. So as a play caller, it's being able to balance those two things.
All right, real quick, let's blow through a couple of these, and then we got Andrew Luck coming up for you. We played that for you last week. We caught up with him a couple of weeks ago. He proved himself to be a delightful man. We talk about oatmeal.
He's great.
How he likes to have his oatmeal.
He'll tell you about his cell phone.
No, we talked. Here was the best question I asked him, though. I'm going to do it again. I'm going to pat myself on the back. But it's fascinating. I said, do you consider yourself to be lucky since your name is Luck and you wear a horseshoe on the side of your hat? And he had an interesting response that I didn't anticipate to that. But yeah, we talked about it all. You'll hear that interview in a minute.
So to summarize, Dave, from you on the show today, you know who's great? Me.
That's right. So what? I had a good week, too. What did I tell you about them Chargers? Anything anybody had them beating the Seahawks? How about Jay Cutler going into the opening of a new stadium and doing what he did? I got tweets halfway through the game. You schnook, I picked him up. I put him in my starting lineup because you said 4 touchdown passes. Now I'm going to lose.
And as a mature adult, did you leave that alone? Did you not revisit it at one point in time later on in the game? Were you mature enough to say, okay, they've taken a shot at me. Mm-hmm. I've been proven to be correct. As the mature adult, I'm not going to go back on my computer and type something to them. I'm sure that's what you did, right?
I don't know where you got confused with me being a mature adult. Of course I didn't do that. Of course I let them know I was right. All right, Buffalo Bills, glass half full.
Glass half full. They have allowed exactly one catch over 20 yards through two games. They've allowed exactly one run over 10 yards in two games. Everybody likes to take their shots at Jim Schwartz and the Detroit Lions, and they were undisciplined. The guy is an outstanding defensive coordinator with what he's done there. And they have a lot of talent up front. Their secondary, even with some injuries, they've been able to hang in there. Lose Jarius Byrd in the offseason hasn't bothered him at all. I said it when I went through there.
I thought 21
of their 22 starters, I'll put them up against just about anybody. It's going to be the play of the quarterback and E.J. Manuel. Dink and dunk, dink and dunk, dink and dunk. Protect the football. They're winning games.
You sang songs about their front four, their front seven. You said how good it was going to be, and so far you've been absolutely right about that. Kudos on that. E.J. Manuel, I'll try to give a tepid half empty on that. I don't know what's going to be with that guy, but as long as, you know, he's got enough playmakers out there, like you say, don't ask him to do too much. Just put the ball in their hands and let them do the rest. It's interesting. Do you think they can take down the Patriots, though?
I don't think
they're
so.
They're soft. The Patriots are soft in the middle. So many of these contenders. The Saints, I don't know if we count the Steelers as a contender, but there are a lot of teams that seem to be, or at least in another era, would be fatally flawed. You could not win the Super Bowl. You can't go deep if you can't stop a team from running the ball. But a lot of these teams that we're talking about is, oh, they're going to be fine. They'll still end up winning their division. Can't stop the run.
Yeah, I think there's 4 teams that won games this week without having a rusher run for more than 40 yards. So I
guess maybe it doesn't matter.
No, I mean, Jay Cutler led the Bears with 25 rushing yards, and they just went and beat San Francisco.
All right. Any other teams jump out at you before we get to Luck here? I just wanted to make sure we cover your guys here. Yeah, we're going to wrap it up here, Black Tie Behind the Glass. What? The Cowboys
I
want to
see you. I just want to see you debate yourself real quick and give me a glass half full, half empty on the Oakland Raiders.
Oh, those poor things. They are bad. That's
a tough watch.
I predicted the Cowboys would have the first overall pick in the draft. They may not even be last in their division because of how bad the Giants are, but the Raiders just might be worse than all of them. Although Derek Carr looks in.
He's doing okay. He's doing the best
all right.
He can.
He doesn't look too bad. Last team is the two that play this weekend in this bevy of great games. I mentioned Ravens at Browns. We have the Super Bowl rematch coming up. It's going to be fun. Steelers at Panthers is intriguing. Bears at Jets is interesting. Chargers at Bills is a juicy one. Packers at Lions. NFC North. Shootout. Do glass half empty, glass half full. Glass half full on these two teams for me. Lions coming off of a 7-point performance.
Yeah, Lions, they've had some injuries up front along the offensive line that hurt them a little bit. I think they're going to be fine, though, with all the weapons that they have. Calvin, you know, had that one touchdown kind of go through his hands when he got raked out when he was going to the ground.
Different game if he catches that ball.
They're actually playing really well against the run. The secondary's played a little bit better than expected. So, look, that's a tough place to go play against the Panthers. I think they're going to be fine. The Green Bay Packers, I mean, we've seen them on defense still with major holes. They're going to have to, you know, Aaron Rodgers, it's all on him now. He's got to lead
again,
them.
Again, I know
all
it.
On him. Well, they make all these moves every year on defense, and it's the same tune. It's got to come down to Aaron Rodgers winning shootouts.
All right. Well, we're going to be talking with our old pal, A.J. Hawk, who stands right in the middle of that Packers defense later in the week, so we'll look forward to catching up with him. At least his team's off to Schneid, so that's good. Packers ultimate. I mean, but, yeah, like you say, Bears, Packers, Lions, that is not NFC North brand of football or style or whatever, but all those games should just be 40 to 38 beauties.
It's going
to
be fun. Before I leave you there, Dave, just tell me that nobody else will hear it. It's just me. Mm-hmm. But we've talked about you having two spinoff podcasts. You've got the Around the League guys.
Right.
Or Around the NFL guys,
correct?
And you've got the Move the Sticks podcast. Who's your favorite?
You.
Thank you.
Yeah. Definitely you, because I
didn't really doubt it. I just needed to hear it.
Yeah, well, there you have it. Do you see any of them sitting in here right
now? I do not.
No, you do not, Daniel Jeremiah. You keep your chin up. All right, listen, Daniel Jeremiah doing gangbusters work all over NFL media, on the network, on the .com, on Now, and now on podcasts, the Dave Damaschek Football Program, and his own Move the Sticks. He keeps getting good guests, too. I don't like that. How come he gets so much better guests? Although we have A.J. Hawk this week, so that's not true this week, at least. We'll catch up with our pal later in the week. Plus, Elliot Harrison, Handsome Hank, and I'll get together in here in Studio 66. Maximum strength!
Or just new Studio 66.
Thank you, Black Tie, for the Red Challenge Flag pick segment, which, again, I dominated in week two. I expect to do the same in week three. So be on the lookout for that. Right now, though, here he is, the star quarterback of the Indianapolis Colts. My conversation with him, Andrew Luck. All right, here he is, one of the greats in 2014 in the NFL. He's brought to us by Quaker. It's Andrew Luck. What's the poop, fella?
Nothing much. Just a nice day here and enjoying life.
All right, very good. I want to kibitz with you about all of it, but our time is short, so let's jump right into it. We'll talk about what you're doing with Quaker in just a second here. Meantime, you know, we fans, I say that you have quickly become one of the more popular players in the NFL because of your style of play. And, of course, you and the guys who came into the league 2011 and beyond, a lot of guys who have that pass and run dimension to the game. Do you like watching yourself? Do you enjoy watching highlights of yourself?
I try to stay away from watching highlights of myself. I don't think I enjoy it. You know, we watch so much film of ourselves throughout the weeks or throughout the years. I think we become numb to, you know, to be able to watch us do anything for pleasure, I should say. Mm. So it's always with a critical eye.
But you like, well, listen, the one highlight, if there's any in your playing history, I bet it's the one-handed catch you made at Stanford, right?
I guess. That was fun to be able to play receiver for a play. Yeah,
who do you like in watching any of those guys I referred to, that 21st century hybrid type quarterback, or do you skew more towards Peyton, Brady, and those stand-in-the-pocket types?
You know, growing up, I loved watching Peyton and Brady, and I loved watching Steve McNair. I always thought he was, you know, tough as nails, and then made some unbelievable plays. And you know, it is fun, you know, to watch some of the runners as well. Although I think, you know, the older I've gotten, the less you sort of watch as a fan, mm-hmm. and the less you're able to sort of enjoy it. The more you're watching the defense or whatever, and it's, you know, it's just part of the business. I think you've been trained to watch everything with a, you know, with, well, if we were doing it, how would we do that? So it's a little different now.
I got you. You know, they still play the Pro Bowl. I say let's go the NBA route or the Major League Baseball route and do some skills type stuff. Who would win if we lined up all the QBs and said let's do a 40-yard dash? You, Russell Wilson, Kaepernick, Tannehill, Newton. Who would win that race?
That is a good question. I think you go. Go to the combine numbers. I'm pretty sure Robert Griffin ran the fastest 40, so I'd probably have to give him the nod.
Who do you think would lose between Peyton, Brady, and Rivers?
I don't know. They don't need to run fast. They throw balls and win games.
I see. All right. Fair enough. You're letting the older fellas off the hook there. But I mentioned Stanford a second ago. Do you think, because that's been the buzz the last few years, and he has rebuked the advances, do you think David Shaw will ever take a shot at the NFL?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if it's my place to say if he will or won't. I know he's a Stanford alum. I know, being a Stanford alumnus myself, we're very proud to have him as our head coach. He's perfect for the job, so hopefully he stays there forever. But, you know, I understand it's not my decision to make. It's his decision to make, and if he keeps, you know, keeps up the great success he's had, I'm sure many, many opportunities will come knocking. But you know, I don't know if it's my place to say if he should stay or go. We'd love him to stay, though, of course.
All right, fair enough. But here is something you can weigh in on. As one of the proudest Stanford Cardinal alumni from the football program, you and Elway, maybe you two could put your heads together and say something to the program about this. Those black uniforms have to go, man. It's enough. You have the red ones with the white pants and white hat. That's all you need. You don't need that black nonsense.
I love the classic red and white. It's simple, but I think it's fun for the guys to be able to wear black once a year. I know I enjoyed it, and I think the guys get a kick out of it.
All right, fair enough. How about this? You are well known for your Mennonite-style beard. I would love, I don't know why I have this as a fantasy, but I would love to shave you sometime. Can I do it?
You know, you're going to have to ask my girlfriend first, but
she likes to do it herself. She likes to take the blade out there.
I think it's something you need permission from her to do that.
All right. Okay. So tell me what you're doing now with Quaker. Sounds like cool stuff.
Yeah, no. So third year in a row, had the honor, the pleasure to team up with Quaker and their partner, you know, Fuel Up to Play 60. We're doing a contest, Make the Play contest at QuakerMakeThePlay.com. Families, you know, in the fall, families go online, sign up, show us how you're getting creative, how you're getting outside, being active, making up games, and a chance for a sort of day of fun with me in the off season. The grand prize would go around and eat some good breakfast, eat some oats, mm-hmm. and throw a football around and play some of the games that these folks have created. So a fun way to encourage, you know, families really to get outside together and enjoy themselves.
Well, that does sound like fun, and maybe we could start. It's not the most novel idea, but my quarterback foot race is pretty fun.
There you go. There's the first one.
Yeah, that's the baseline.
Just got to get the people involved now.
I got you. Yeah, we just had, that's our baseline established. Now beat that world out there. So participate in that. That sounds like good stuff. Are you a fan of eating the oats? I grew up on the oatmeal. That was Mo Damashek's. That was her special treat before sending me off to school each day.
I grew up on them as well. I still eat them every breakfast, actually. I'm a little weird. I put yogurt on my oatmeal, but it's the way I like it, and I guess I'm sort of proud of it now. A lot of fruit, too. But it's a part of my breakfast, absolutely.
Boy, I'll tell you, you're a likable fella, but you and I don't park our cars in the same garage on many things. And I am obstinate, and I do not like fruit mixed in with my oatmeal. I'm not a fan of that move.
Well, I think you're missing out on one of the finer things in life.
Okay, so after I shave you, I'll put fruit in your oatmeal, but none for me then.
Okay, it's a deal.
Okay, good. And also, do you? I think it would be funny, sort of like, you know, being a woman named Roxanne and not knowing the Police have a song about that. Do you consider yourself lucky? Do you believe in luck?
That is a tough, deep question.
It is.
You know, I've avoided saying luck. I say fortune most of the time. It sounds weird when it comes from me or my siblings or my parents or cousins. You know, I think we all sort of say fortune for some reason.
That's a weird move. I would think you would do like Donald Trump. He trademarked "you're fired." You could certainly trademark anyone saying "good luck." That should be your move.
That might be a stretch.
I might give it. It is pretty neat, though, that you get to wear the horseshoe on the side of your hat, and your last name is Luck, right?
Yeah, my sisters were super stoked about that when I was drafted by Indianapolis. So.
Yeah, very strange.
Yeah, it is.
Who did you? But you grew up, or at least spent some time, or your old man at least spent time with the Houston Oilers. That's where I remember watching him toil. Who was your favorite Houston Oiler growing up besides your dad?
You know, he had retired by the time I was born, and we never really lived in Houston until high school. So I wasn't a huge Oilers fan per se, but Earl Campbell would have been my favorite, I guess.
Oh, yeah, he'd be terrific. And maybe, listen, with all due respect to the guys you have standing behind you in Indianapolis now, imagine Earl Campbell running behind Andrew Luck. That would be devastating.
He was very special.
Last thing, we just over the summertime when the World Cup was going on and all of that sort of thing, we cobbled together and of course you probably heard when LeBron James decided to go back to Cleveland as well, we decided to consider what would happen if all the NFL players went back to their hometowns and played in an NFL Cup, a World Cup-style tournament. You won't be surprised to learn L.A., Miami, the Texas towns all had good teams. But if something like that, if there was a World Cup for football, where would you go? Which nation do you think you would want to play for?
Well, the United States, of course.
Not Germany. What if Tom Brady won the gig over you and they said, well, Germany, you can come out here and play. Would you do that?
No, I my allegiance is 100% to the U.S., yeah.
I love it. USA. See, he's a patriot. Well, he's not a New England patriot. He's an American patriot. Even better. Andrew Luck, as advertised, you are delightful, even though you eat fruit on your oatmeal. I wish you nothing but the best. And again, talking about Quaker Oats, make sure you get in there, day of play, and come up with some clever ideas there. Invent your own sports. That's what we did growing up, right? I assume that's what you had to do as a kid growing up, right? Over in Germany and inventing your own fun.
Well, and in Germany it was like you're inventing American football, so because they didn't know about it, so it was easy. But yeah, it was fun. But check it out, QuakerMakeThePlay.com. It'll be fun.
This American is a genius. He has come up with a great game. That was my attempt in a German accent. It wasn't very good.
You could work on it.
There he is, everybody. Quarterback of the Indianapolis Colts, Andrew Luck. Thanks for the time, fella.
All right, take care.
Dave Demichel.